Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @RightStream and hashtag #RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Daria Ann, host of Right Stream Tuesday, and I'd like to welcome you to another broadcast. As always, I have yet another fabulous guest lined up for today, and I know you're going to really enjoy today's show. But before I introduce her, I just want to let everyone know that Right Stream Radio, you can find us at rightstreamradio.com. This network, I founded it back in March of 2013, and we have several excellent shows, starting with Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez, Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Right Stream Tuesday, of course, with me, Family Power Hour with licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Billy Eisenberg and family law attorney Sheena Benjamin Wise, and Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, a fun women's sort of lifestyle issues show that Lisa and I host on Friday evenings. For the full lineup of shows and for more information about all our wonderful hosts, please visit rightstreamradio.com. And if you've missed any of our archives, you can always go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream and and listen to some former broadcasts. Today's show, Right Stream Tuesday, we're going to talk to Dr. Tanya Howard, who has actually been a repeat guest on John Gresham's show, Military Monday, to talk about a lot of the wonderful work that she does with United States veterans. But today I'm just thrilled to welcome Dr. Tanya to talk about a problem that does affect writers. It also affects a lot of people, anyone who really works with a computer for long hours every day. And I think there's some other causes of this particular problem that I'm referring to, carpal tunnel syndrome. And I wanted to bring Dr. Tanya on today, though, kind of in a little bit of a departure from my usual format, because certainly as writers, this is something that has the potential, to cause problems in your career, especially if you're spending, lots of time at the computer. And so I thought we would bring Dr. Tanya on to talk about holistic ways to deal with carpal tunnel syndrome and actually ways to even prevent it from happening in the first place. How about that? I wanted to, excuse me, I'm sorry I am babbling. I don't know why I'm just kind of all over the place today. Just one of those days. But Dr. Tanya is a wonderful chiropractor. She's based in Maryland. She's very much into holistic healing, which I like very much, which also makes her a fabulous guest for Just Believe, by the way. So, Lisa, if you're listening, we could bring Dr. Tanya onto Just Believe or certainly Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss in a future broadcast. But honestly, folks, I have listened to her interviews with John in the past and have just been so blown away by her knowledge and just, her personality. It's just so much fun to listen to her. So I am thrilled to be the one to interview her today. If you have any questions for Dr. Tanya, you can call into the show at 347-945-7246. I welcome those as we go along. And I know from some family members and a close friend of mine that carpal tunnel syndrome can be quite a problem. And in fact, I'm actually going to ask Dr. Tanya about one particular situation I'm aware of to see if there's any good information that I can pass along to this person so that they can get some relief. But, if you or anyone you know is suffering from carpal tunnel, please call in and we'll welcome your calls again at 347-945-7246. But here's a little bit more about Dr. Tanya from her blog, and you can find it at drtanya.com. Now that is Dr. drtanya.com. And she says, "I truly feel like I was chosen to be a chiropractor. But to me, providing treatment was just the beginning of helping my patients to be healthier. Counseling them about living a healthy, balanced life in an unhealthy world was essential and something I have enjoyed very much. Many times I would hear my patients say, 'Why have I never heard that before? Why has no one told me that before? You should write a book.' And although I love teaching one-to-one in my office, I feel a calling to change the world a little more quickly and teach one-to-many. That's why I created this blog. If you wonder what makes this blog different from all others, it's understandable. There are thousands of other female bloggers out there who write to lifestyle, so what does make me different? Though there are a lot of great women out there living some cool lives and blogging about it, I have yet to find someone in the health and wellness field that is doing the job that I would like them to do. So I am stepping up. The formal training makes me a doctor. 20 years of working with patients in a successful practice makes me a knowledgeable one, and yet at the end of the day, I'm a mother, a wife, a daughter, a friend, and now a blogger. Take it or leave it. Well, I'm here to say that we will definitely take it. So without further ado, I welcome Dr. Tanya Howard to RightStream Tuesday.
Thank you so much, Daria, for that very kind introduction. It's really nice to be with your listeners today.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here, and I'm really, you know, it's nice every once in a while to kind of take a break from the usual format, and this certainly is, you know, as I said in my intro, that this is an issue that affects writers and lots of people that spend time at a computer. So, Dr. Tanya, let me have you in your own words, though. Tell us, what exactly is carpal tunnel syndrome, and what are some of the risks for getting it?
Well, carpal tunnel syndrome is a name for the condition that results in numbness, tingling, pain, or weakness, and primarily your thumb and your pointer finger. It happens when a nerve, it's called the median nerve, is entrapped in what we call the carpal tunnel. I'll try to give you a little anatomy lesson, but I will also refer your listeners, Daria, to my blog posts, both of today and yesterday, that go in depth to kind of the anatomy and physiology behind what exactly carpal tunnel syndrome is, how to treat it, and most importantly, how to prevent it, because I do prefer to be more proactive than reactive. So carpal tunnel syndrome, again, is a condition that results in pain, numbness, tingling, and or weakness, and primarily your thumb and your finger, and it's when the median nerve gets irritated or compressed in the little tunnel as the muscle and nerve fibers pass through the wrist, essentially.
Interesting. Okay, and so what are some of the, okay, obviously working at a computer can cause it. Like what exactly happens, you know, when somebody develops that?
Well, there are different risk factors. Certainly as a writer, you can understand that your hands are held at a very awkward angle, sometimes for hours at a time, and certainly day after day when that's your profession. So holding your hand in an extended position or in an awkward position over time can certainly irritate the nerves that cause carpal tunnel syndrome. Additionally, if you've ever had a fall, I know when I was a kid, I tried to learn how to ice skate, and that was a really poor decision because I was not very good at it. So I would fall on my outstretched hands over and over and over again, and that's direct trauma to the wrist. So anyone who's ever had a fall directly on the hand or wrist is also at very, very high risk for developing carpal tunnel syndrome. In addition to writers, anyone who works with their hands, like a construction worker or someone who's manning, we have someone working on the road outside our house, so they're constantly drilling jackhammering the road away, and those folks definitely are at risk for carpal tunnel syndrome. People like hairdressers and even mothers of young children who are constantly holding babies in their hands. So anything that results in a direct macro trauma or large trauma to your hands or repetitive stress trauma to your hands is at risk for carpal tunnel syndrome. And again, I would strongly recommend your listeners, if they haven't had it, if they've been lucky enough to not have it as being full-time writers, that they should do everything they can to prevent it, because it's really difficult to resolve, and it can result in permanent damage to your hand and fingers.
Listen, you know what, Dr. Tanya, I can totally relate to the ice skating. That was, you know, I tried many times too and failed miserably at it. Like to watch it though. But no, on a serious note, I have to say with that last point you made is so important because, you know, I have a cousin, Annie, who unfortunately a year and a half ago when she started to notice numbness in her fingertips, freaked out and thought, oh my gosh, I have Parkinson's, because her own father unfortunately passed away from that. And so she waited out of fear, and by the time she got to a doctor, you know, she had problems in both hands and just had two surgeries, and she's struggling right now. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I think that it seems like some of these symptoms can mimic something much more serious, but people should really kind of, you know, go see a professional, you know, as soon as they start to notice those kinds of things.
They should. You know, I will often take the wait-and-see approach because our bodies are very strongly self-healing and can resolve a lot of issues. But if you have something that's lingering for more than a passing day or getting worse, I would definitely, especially in the case of any numbness or tingling of any part of your body, seek medical attention as quickly as possible. You can, when you have atrophy, when you have long-term carpal tunnel syndrome that has not been resolved or corrected, it actually leads to atrophy or wasting of the muscles of your hand. And if you think about all that we do with our hands, I mean, so many things are kind of subconscious. We reach for the coffee cup, we reach for the pen, we hold our children, we hold our, you know, our partner's hands. not being able to use the hands to do even simple tasks like, you know, opening a can or dialing telephone, it would be a devastating lifestyle shift. So this is something that we really depend on so strongly, yet we kind of take it for granted. So please, if you have a warning sign that something's happening in your hands, you know, do get it addressed as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and so let's take a step back then, Dr. Tanya. Let's talk about what people can do to prevent this, because I'm with you. I'm all for preventing problems, you know, before they happen. So what are some simple things that we can all do to make sure that we don't get carpal tunnel syndrome?
Well, being mindful of it is one really strong point. You know, again, we take our hands for granted, and we just, you know, we go from waking up and blow drying our hair and using our hands, you know, overwhelmingly to making our lunches and using our hands to cut things and package things. And then we get on the computer for 6 to 8 hours a day as we write. And then we don't even take a break because now we check our email and our text and our voicemail and our Twitter. So we really are overusing our hands. So being mindful of that and taking frequent breaks is really, really critical. And if you need to set a timer on your computer or your iPhone or your kitchen stove to just literally step back from whatever task that you're doing that involves your hands, take a break, shake it out, do some gentle stretches. That can be super helpful in just releasing the muscles and the nerves of the hand, wrist, and arm. So frequent breaks from any posture, really, but especially from using our hands overwhelmingly, can be really helpful. You also want to become as ambidextrous as possible. I bet that would be tough for you to do, Daria, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you should see me try to write with my left hand. It's not pretty.
I do understand that, and as a kid for some reason, I wanted to try to become left-handed. I don't know why, and I never was successful in that either. But in terms of using a computer, it's a little easier. In my perfect world, each of your listeners would have a right-handed mouse, also be able to mouse with their left hand, and then even to another level would have a trackball for the right hand and the left hand. It just gives different parts of your body, first your right hand and then your left hand, an opportunity to rest and relax in between use. But it also gives different muscles and joints and nerves a chance to regroup and regenerate. So in a perfect world, you might say for the first week of the month, use your mouse with your right hand. And then for the second week, you would use the mouse with your left hand. And then the third week, you'd use a trackball with your right hand. And the fourth week, with your left hand. And, you know, that takes obviously a little investment in time and money to get two devices. And also there's a ramp-up period because it's quite awkward to start doing anything with your non-dominant hand. But that is one of the key things that especially people who are writing, can do to really prolong the longevity of their ability to use their hands effectively.
So you called that was called a trackball, you said? Dr. Tanya?
It's a trackball. It's something that one would use instead of a mouse. Mine has a big red ball on it, and my hand rests in a very anatomical and neutral position, and just my thumb moves to move my cursor on my computer. And I don't see them overwhelmingly in the office supply stores, but they are available. And for that particular item, you would have to get one for your right and your left hand because they are anatomically situated. I think you could use a traditional mouse with either hand effectively. I don't believe that they make a left-handed mouse. I think you could just adapt yourself to use it with either hand. You know, you might just challenge yourself and challenge your listeners to say, this is a month that we're all going to become ambidextrous. That's helpful for other things, too, like holding grocery bags. You know, I traditionally always carry my grocery bags with my right hand because that's my stronger arm. But when you think about the weight of grocery bags, you know, week in and week out on your wrist, that's a huge risk factor as well. So, again, becoming mindful and then using a non-dominant hand will really buy you years, if not decades, in longevity.
Wow, that's great advice. I know for myself, I have little tiny baby wrists, too. And so I have to be really careful. So are there exercises also, Dr. Tanya, that people can do? I had somebody show me some exercises one time that really work. Like, and I want to get your opinion on this. Like, for example, one of them is to, I hope I describe it right, you place both your palms together as if you're praying with your elbows out and just kind of stretch and then curl your hands so that they're together and it kind of just stretches out the wrist. And I found that and wearing a little brace on my arm at night really, really helps. I mean, I never had CTS, but every once in a while I get like achy wrists and I think, oh my gosh, you know, how do I prevent this? And that's what somebody, I think it was a massage therapist that had recommended that to me.
Yeah, what you described is a really effective stretch to stretch both the flexor and the extensor muscles of your hand. And stretching is a very important part of maintaining health as well. But you mentioned your tiny little bird-like wrists, and I have those as well. So keeping them strong, you know, building muscle versus just stretching muscle is also critical. So you'll want to encourage your listeners and yourself also to use just very light hand weights. And again, it's difficult to show. I'm kind of a show-me girl, so it's hard to describe in words. Exercises to do on the radio, but anything that would work both the flexion, curling your wrist towards your arms, and then the extension, curling your wrist away from your arms, and they can probably just Google, you know, wrist strengthening exercises online. I mean, God, what would we do without Google these days? I don't know.
Seriously, yeah.
But doing that would really result in some stronger muscles that support your wrist and your hand to keep that tunnel as healthy and open as possible. I do a lot of yoga. I do a lot of kind of cross-training classes, and those require a lot of planking and push-up positions, and those do increase arm strength, but they also put an awful lot of pressure on your wrist. So when trying to strengthen wrists, remember that wrist strength comes in time. You know, they're small and bony for a reason. There's not a lot of muscular support right around the wrist, so you're not going to get big bulging wrists. You're just going to support the muscles of the arm and the forearm and the upper arm and the hands, and that in turn will stabilize the wrist. So doing non-weight-bearing exercises, again, I love a push-up. I love a yoga plank and a down dog. Those things all are really great for building strength, but they also can be stressful on the wrist. So just taking some hand weights and doing some figure eights and doing some wrist extensions and flexions can really very gently build the musculature. And then, of course, always we want to stretch after we do any workout. And those exercises that you described for stretching are very helpful. Doing that prayer position and then what I call the reverse prayer, where you're, where the backs of your hands are together versus the palms.
Yes. Yeah. That really helped me a lot. And sometimes, too, I do a lot of Leslie Sansone Power Walk DVDs, and she has a stretchy band that you use. But I tend to wear, sometimes I'll wear the wrist guard just to keep my wrist protected, and that seems to help keep any potential problems at bay anyway.
I think that's pretty wise of you, Daria. You know, I didn't talk a lot about wrist guards or braces in the articles that I did. I didn't like for people to depend on them too strongly. What happens when you wear a wrist brace or guard, other than for prevention versus for an injury, it tends to take the place of the muscles. So my muscles don't have to work so hard to keep my wrist stable because they have a wrap on. Therefore, when I take the wrap off, I might actually be a little weaker. So there's a fine line. When you know that you're going to be doing, say, a lot of keyboarding or, say, walking a dog where they pull on your wrist or carrying groceries, something that is going to require a lot of strength and stability in your wrist, it's a great idea to wear a wrist brace or a support or even just to wrap it with an ACE bandage or some athletic tape. But as far as leaving it on day in and day out, not a good idea for the reason I just described. It really can weaken the wrist over time. So, for instance, when I'm working in my chiropractic office, there's a lot of demands on my wrist. So I will often tape or wrap my wrist, especially if I'm feeling vulnerable. And then at the end of my shift, I unwrap it. I do some strengthening exercises and some stretching exercises. And I even will put some ice on it or some arnica or Tramiel, which ice is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. We can talk about that some more at length. Also, Tramiel and Arnica are homeopathic forms of anti-inflammatory that can be very helpful in minimizing inflammation of the wrist. So, again, being proactive, wearing the brace when you have a lot of demands, strengthening, stretching, and then using some type of anti-inflammatory if you're feeling inflamed and irritated, for sure.
Okay, great. And Dr. Tanya, I'm going to hold that thought about inflammatory because somebody had suggested a particular holistic remedy, and I want to ask you about that for inflammation. But we have a caller on the line, and I think this might be a mutual friend of ours. We'll see when I answer the call, bring this caller on the air. So let me get to that because I don't want to keep them waiting too long. Right, caller from 703, you're on Right Stream Tuesday with Dr. Tanya.
Hello, Dr. Tanya. Hello, Daria. This is John Gresham.
Hello, hey. John. Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to hear you, and I'm very, very pleased you're talking about this, having, you know, being a 25-year professional author myself. I wanted to just say that your commentary regarding rotating the stresses on the right and left hand has really proven to be very helpful to me in the past few years. And I'm going to take up your suggestion about trackballs because I think that that's going to work better as my hands and I age, chunking towards 60. And I'd love to hear your commentary regarding that rotation of stresses on different sides of the body.
Well, I'm so happy to have a testimonial for the becoming ambidextrous, John. It is a tough thing to sell. I don't get a lot of people jumping on that enthusiastically. But because the more you use a joint, and this applies to any joint of your body, the more you use a joint of your body and the harder you use it, the more quickly it will wear out. Our joints do wear out over time, and the goal should be that they should wear out evenly from side to side and not acutely causing pain and trauma. So anything you can do, like we talked about, alternating with a trackball on the mouse, is to your full advantage. So we need to have your wonderful words of wisdom continuing to come out for decades to come. So you need to continue your good habits. So
well,
you
thank you for that. And Daria, you've picked a great show today, a good subject, and of course a mutual friend of ours who can talk to this Barley as well as anybody we know. I'm going to go and get out of the way so that you two can keep the discussion going. Thank you both.
Thanks for calling, John.
Bye.
Bye. All right, and that was the wonderful John D. Gresham. Check out his show, Military Monday, every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern. But Dr. Tanya, before John called in, I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned inflammation, and somebody, another friend of mine who's really into holistic health, had suggested, when I was telling her about my cousin, actually, something called serrapeptase. And I wondered, do you have any thoughts on that and whether that's an effective holistic remedy?
You know, Daria, I have to say that I'm not familiar with that, and I don't want to even speculate about it because I don't want to give anyone any misinformation. I will say, though, that the traditional anti-inflammatories used in the medical practice for something like carpal tunnel syndrome are corticosteroids or steroid injections. And I can tell you that you want to do everything you can to stay away from that. Steroid injections are really, really powerful and very effective anti-inflammatory, but you have a lifetime supply that you can have in your body. And, again, I'm not a medical doctor, and I don't want to misquote that, but I think it's something like maybe two or three times. Any one body part can only be injected two or three times over your lifetime because you're on a high risk of actually bone destruction. It will actually destroy the bones of your wrist. Yeah. So this is serious stuff. So someone who's in their 20s or 30s having carpal tunnel syndrome does certainly not want to even entertain the thought of a steroid injection because you have the rest of your life, you know, if you have a significant trauma or get an accident, then you can't have an injection in that area of your body anymore. So someone would want to do everything they could possibly do to avoid that type of injection to manage the symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome. So I would encourage the friend that you spoke to just do her diligence on that that product, that treatment that she found, and give it a try. Most homeopathic and complementary, I don't want to say medications, but treatments are much more benign. The side effects are far, far less than what you'd expect with a traditional pharmaceutical remedy. So I can't speak to that particular one, but generally know that a lot of the natural anti-inflammatories are so benign with few to no side effects.
Excellent. Yeah, and I've always been, it's kind of funny. I mean, my dad's a traditional medical doctor, surgeon, and I it's not that I believe that Western medicine has its place. I just know in my own experience, I have, over the years and for certain things I've had, I've always been able to find a holistic solution, and so I completely agree with that. And my dad himself always said, you know, surgery should always be a last resort, absolute last resort. And so should, and he always believed, to his credit too, so should prescribing pharmaceuticals. So I've always been attracted to finding alternative remedies. But Dr. Tanya, so speaking of that, can chiropractic help people suffering with carpal tunnel syndrome?
You know, I'm a chiropractor, so I look for chiropractic solutions, but let me give you a little bit more of the anatomy lesson behind carpal tunnel syndrome.
Sure.
So if you look at your wrist, there are actually, and right where your hand meets your arm essentially is your wrist, and there are eight small bones called your carpal bones, hence the term carpal tunnel syndrome. And those bones form your wrist, and to keep them together is a ligament. There's a ligament that kind of holds those bones together, and that actually forms a tunnel. So between the ligaments and the bones is a small tunnel that allows for the vessels, the nerves, and the muscular tendons to go from the arm to the hand. So if one of those eight bones becomes misaligned, and they're pebble size, they're small, but you can imagine, again, those falls on the ice or carrying heavy grocery bags over time, that those eight bones can shift a little bit. And that can directly compress the median nerve as it passes through the carpal tunnel, creating carpal tunnel syndrome. So chiropractors are very well trained in assessing, diagnosing, and treating carpal tunnel syndrome by simply realigning the bones of the wrist. Very, very effective. And we also can counsel our patients on things like stretching, strengthening, and controlling inflammation. Because when you have a misalignment in your wrist or you have a direct trauma to your wrist, there will always be inflammation, and that's another fancy word for swelling. So imagine you have this very finite space, this very small tunnel that has lots of stuff happening, passing through it. And now you have swelling, which means there's excess fluid in that tunnel, so it compresses things. So you really want to not only maintain alignment, but you also want to decrease the inflammation. And like we talked about, ice is a wonderful way to control inflammation in your wrist. And the most effective way that I have found to use it is to get like a Tupperware drink container and fill it with some cold water, immerse your arm up to, you know, beyond your wrist, kind of halfway up your forearm, and then dump a few ice cubes in there. This way, the cold water gets into all the nooks and crannies of your hand and wrist, whereas if you use an ice pack on it, there are parts that do not get the effect of the ice because you can't possibly form an ice pack, even a gel one, around all the little nooks and crannies of your hand. So immersing your hand into an ice bath is a really great way to reduce inflammation of the carpal tunnel. And I have my patients do small figure eights and kind of flex and clench their hands to make sure that all the good blood is coming in and the bad blood is coming out, and it helps to flush things through the carpal tunnel. So that's a great, easy, free way to maintain inflammation, to reduce inflammation and maintain the health of the carpal tunnel. There's also an anti-inflammatory diet. And I can talk for days about this very subject area, but, you know, lots of foods that we eat are inflammation-causing. And generally, they include grains, dairy, and nightshade vegetables, which are tomatoes, potatoes, eggplants, things like that. But I have found personally that eliminating or minimizing grains in my diet and dairy in my diet in particular helps to minimize inflammation. The folks that are suffering from not only carpal tunnel, but other forms of arthritis and autoimmune diseases tend to fare much, much better while on an anti-inflammatory diet. So we can get super comprehensive here. I mean, we can talk about your wrist, or we can talk about just maintaining, you know, a healthier life overall. But certainly having an anti-inflammatory diet will help, the symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome.
Now, Dr. Tani, speaking of that, is that similar to, you know, Lisa, one of my friends was telling me about the wheat belly diet. And is that the same principle where, you know, grains like wheat cause, you know, some people get wheat belly, what they call wheat belly? Is it sort of like the same principle at work there?
It really is. You know, when we used to grow grains, you know, back in our grandparents' day, farmers grew wheat and other grains, and they milled them into flours to bake our breads and pastas and things like that. And because we are a really industrialized nation, we want to get more bang for a buck. So we have genetically modified our wheats to grow more wheat in less time. And that genetic modification is thought to contribute heavily towards all of the autoimmune diseases and inflammatory diseases that we're finding rampant. I mean, the rates of every autoimmune disease, thinking about things like fibromyalgia, all the arthritides, all of the colon diseases, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, they are just off the charts. And they all have a heavy component that points towards diet. And because we are such a grain-heavy society, we all want bread and cookies and crackers and cakes and pastas. That is a huge contributing factor. So anti-inflammatory diets are just better for us overall. And there are some supplements that we can talk about as well to help heal from that situation.
Yeah, no, I would love to, because I have a very good friend, another good friend, and I won't say her name, but I mean, and several friends, actually, unfortunately, I know who suffer from fibromyalgia, which is also caused by inflammation, correct? Or partly?
It really is. You know, it's rare. You know, when you think about medical terminology, Daria, a lot of things end in itis, and itis is a fancy medical word for inflammation. So arthritis, conjunctivitis, otitis, a lot of the gastritis, colitis, all of these things end in itis, so they all have an inflammatory component. So if our bodies, even if you feel well, and you consume a lot of these foods that are inflammatory in nature, you're going to have a very, very low threshold. So if something, some type of stress, a physical stress, a chemical stress, an emotional stress, puts you over that threshold, boom, you are right into an inflammatory disease process. And it manifests in different people different ways. So I can't tell you that if you eat a lot of bread, you're going to get colitis or you're going to get fibromyalgia. But I will tell you that if you eat a highly inflammatory diet, that you will not be as healthy as you can be, period, end of story.
Well, so let's talk a little bit more about that, Dr. Tanya, the anti-inflammatory diet, because you mentioned a few foods there that I was kind of like, oh, no, I love potatoes.
I know, but, I know.
So let's get into – I would love to talk a little bit more about that. How would an anti-inflammatory diet work, and what are some of the things we should eat versus what we shouldn't eat?
I can make it really easy and talk about no grains, no dairy, and that is kind of blanket. Now, there are some other specific foods like the nightshade vegetables, and I have a personal – conflict about that, because if you're eating vegetables, that's better than eating a loaf of white bread, right? So
exactly.
that's kind of my perimeter issue. So if I have a patient who is suffering from inflammatory conditions, I will immediately suggest that they go on an anti-inflammatory elimination diet. So I tell them to eliminate all of the grain, and specifically, if they just give me a really hard time, look at me like I'm crazy, I'll say get off of all of the gluten in your diet, which is most grains, not all grains, but most of them. So ideally get off all the grains, but minimally get off all of the gluten-containing grains, like wheat, rye, and don't quote me on this, I think it might be barley, but I'm speaking off the top of my head, certainly wheat and rye, and then get off all dairy. And so get off all that for a month, and most people come in feeling and looking like a totally different person. They're sleeping better, their skin's better, they have better clarity of thought, their aches and pains have gone away, their energy levels have skyrocketed. It is almost without exception, Varia, that these people don't come in saying, I don't know how I lived like that for so long. I didn't know how bad
wow.
I felt until I started feeling better.
Pretty powerful.
At that point, it's really powerful. And it's not for 100% of the people, but I can tell you it's for 100% of the people that I have come into contact with. I just can't imagine that everyone wouldn't feel at least some improvement in their health by getting off those two foods, the grains and the dairies. And then we encourage our patients to then do a challenge, because we live in a world where, to be honest with you, I love a good piece of pizza too, and I love a pasta. I'm an Italian girl. But so I say challenge yourself. Now, you've been off these two things for 3 or 4 weeks. Go home and have a big bowl of pasta and see how you feel in the next 24 to 48 hours. And if you feel bad, and most patients do, now you know you have a sensitivity to that. Now you know that that's one of the foods that you should avoid. And not that you can never have it. I'm not a big believer in, living in lack. Life is short. But know that if you eat those foods, that it will not be serving your body. But if you eat them every day, long term, it will eventually take its toll on your body. And the same thing with dairy. Once you determine whether or not wheat or grains are sensitive for you, then you should do the same thing and challenge yourself with dairy products. And I find that those two food groups taken out lead to a huge improvement in most of my patients' inflammatory processes and just a great improvement in their life and their quality of life in general. And I speak from personal experience. I did this and I continue to do this periodically to clear myself of all grains and dairy.
So now dairy, now we're talking cheese, milk, half and half, cream, correct?
Yogurt.
All of those things are yogurt. Oh, my gosh, yogurt? You're killing me, Dr. Tanya.
Well, here's some rules of thought.
I love Greek yogurt.
And I love Greek yogurt as well, Daria. So here's the deal. What you need to do is know whether or not this is hurting you. Because some people,
yeah.
If you're on the winning team, I have one daughter that can drink cow's dairy all day long and not have a health issue. I have another daughter that looks at it and gets a stomach ache. So clearly, the one that is sensitive to dairy, occasionally has an ice cream, but doesn't really crave it, doesn't really enjoy it, doesn't make her feel good. The daughter who loves it will go through a gallon of milk a day. Now, my philosophy on cow's dairy milk is that cow's milk is for baby cows. First of all, we're the only mammals, the humans are the only mammals that drink milk past infancy, and we're the only mammals that drink the milk of another mammal at all. So I don't think that milk is evil. I don't know that it's all that we've been sold about
right.
It being important for healthy teeth and bones. The further you get away from whole milk, so if you eat a Greek yogurt, it's probably going to bother your body less because it's been kind of fermented a little bit and it's more easily digestible. And then also goat's milk dairy, there's goat milk, there's plenty of goat cheeses and goat yogurt. That has a a protein makeup that's much more similar to human breast milk, so it's much more easily digestible. Babies who are allergic to cow's milk do really well in goat's milk. So I'll often encourage our patients, if you're really sensitive to dairy, but you really can't do without, you know, yogurt or milk or cheese, to look into the goat milk products.
Interesting. Okay. That's good to know. Now, in terms of, are there alternatives for, you know, do they make pastas that are made without, I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but are there alternative products out there that people can have as a substitute if they really want to try something and they can't, you know, they want to do right by their body, but maybe they want to see if there's alternatives out there to their favorite foods like pasta?
There really are, Daria. Now, a grain is a grain. So whether you have a gluten-free pasta or regular pasta, it's still a grain. So I do encourage our patients to get off grains totally for 1 month, and that means basically no pastas, no breads, no crackers. But most patients can tolerate a gluten-free diet really, really well. And if you go to even your very traditional grocery store, like here in Maryland we have the Giant or the Safeway, there's a whole section that offers gluten-free pancake mixes. And I have to give a shout-out Pamela's pancake mix, because it is the best pancake mix bar none, and it's gluten-free and it's so delicious. So I bake with that as well. So there are gluten-free pastas, mixes, and cookies and breads and hamburger rolls and French bread. So you need not live, you know, in a state of you know, denying yourself something that you really enjoy if you're finding that you're gluten sensitive. And there's so much information out there. A colleague of mine, Dr. Amy Myers, she's actually been on Dr. Oz lately. She's so excited about that. She has written extensively on the subject of gluten intolerance, and she has a practice in Texas where that's all she treats is gluten intolerance from a natural perspective. And so there's lots of great, solid information out there. Dr. Amy Myers, M-Y-E-R-S. She's on Facebook, and she has some very reader-friendly advice out there about getting off gluten. So I would suggest that your listeners, if they're interested, check her stuff out as well.
Yeah, that's excellent. And so let's talk about some of the vegetables. So you said, I want to just kind of recap what you said. So you mentioned tomatoes, potatoes, and what else was?
Yeah, they're nightshade vegetables, and I don't have a comprehensive list. Again, I'm flying without a net here, but nightshades are typically tomatoes, potatoes, I think eggplants, possibly peppers. They are vegetables that I think their leaves or their flowers bloom mostly at night. And for some reason, they are inflammatory to the body. Again, I look at the fact that I can choose to have, you know, bologna and white bread for lunch or a great big salad with, you know, eggplant, peppers, and other stuff in it. I'm still feeling okay about the vegetables, you know, even though if I have a significant inflammatory disease, you know, if I have multiple sclerosis, if I have irritable bowel disease, colitis, I'm getting off everything I possibly can. But most of us aren't sensitive to that degree. But if your listeners are really ambitious and want to follow things to the nth degree, they should know that nightshade vegetables can be inflammatory.
Okay, so the green, so like vegetables like broccoli and spinach and green beans are okay for you.
Those are great. Eat away. Eat lots and lots of them.
Awesome, because I love.
And on the subject of supplements. You know, there are two things in particular, just back to the carpal tunnel syndrome. I don't want to promise your listeners that we're talking about this at length and not give them this. But there are two supplements in particular that are very helpful in the management of carpal tunnel syndrome. And the first is I recommend that they take a B-complex vitamin, but specifically B6 is known to somehow affect the median nerve in a positive way. And the research isn't really clear on that, but even the medical references will suggest that B6, I think I got this stat off of Harvard or WebMD, where it's a pretty well-documented site, that B6 in particular can be very helpful in the management of carpal tunnel syndrome. And then omega-3 fatty acids or fish oils are very highly anti-inflammatory. And that's one of the few vitamins that my family takes every single day are omega-3s. And so I suggest that be the first thing probably that your listeners turn towards as a supplement to control inflammation in their body for sure.
Fantastic. I'm glad you brought that up, because with fish oils lately, it seems we've been seeing a lot of conflicting information out there about whether they're effective or not. And I know my parents have been taking them forever, and they seem to do really well with them. So I'm glad to hear you mention that, Dr. Tanya, because I don't know if you've seen that, but it's kind of like there's just in different places on the Internet I've seen conflicting ideas about whether they're effective or not.
Well, the deal is that we used to get fish oil, omega-3s, in our diet when we ate wild fish that was able to, you know, feed on algae and kelps. And these days, the great majority of our fish is farm-raised, and they're fed corn. So it's just something that used to be readily available in our diet that is now basically void in our diet. So this is not some crazy thing that someone's concocted in a chemical lab. This is something that we used to get in our diet because we needed it, and it's no longer available. So supplementation is, I believe, critical. So if it was something crazy, you know, that didn't exist in nature that we didn't use to get in our diet, I might agree with the conflicting reports. Personally, this is something that was available that we've basically taken out of our diets because of industrialization and commercialization of fishing. So I feel pretty important that we have it in our household. And so I recommend that all my patients go on a dose that's comfortable to them. I encourage them to speak to their medical doctors or pharmacists or their nutritional counselors and just pick a good product at an appropriate dose for them.
No, that's really good to know, like I said, because it can get really confusing. And if you're online, especially, as you know, again, there's just so many pros and cons with all these things. And you never know if it's somebody, you know, if it's a legitimate source or not. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I'm all about, you know, informing my listeners about things that are going to make their lives better in every way. And certainly good health is crucial to that. So I was going to ask you too, Dr. Tanya, just with getting back to carpal tunnel syndrome again, because yes, we did promote this as a carpal tunnel syndrome show. I read on your blog that it originates in the neck, and I found that rather interesting. Can you address that? And does that mean that massage therapy might also be good for some people dealing with it?
Absolutely. And just to clarify, Daria, the nerves that are affected in carpal tunnel syndrome originate in the neck. And when you have a true presentation of carpal tunnel syndrome, and that indicates that the problem lies in the wrist. The problem is actually in the wrist. But a lot of other things masquerade as carpal tunnel syndrome. So the nerves that end up in your fingertips actually start way up in your neck. It's like an electrical wire branching off your circuit breaker. So if your neck is a circuit breaker, the wires running down your arm through the carpal tunnel into your fingers are the wiring parts that go, you know, throughout your house, so to speak. So you can certainly have obstruction in your wrist at the carpal tunnel, but you can actually have impingement at the shoulder or the neck. And massage therapy is a wonderful way. In fact, we have a link on our article today that demonstrates the massage techniques that are really comfortable in relieving and releasing carpal tunnel syndrome. Chiropractic, again, in addition to addressing the bony alignment of the wrist, addresses the bony alignment of the shoulder and of the neck. So critical to maintain the alignment of the vertebra, of the arm and wrist bone, so that none of those areas have the potential to pinch off or impinge the nerve there. And I'll even take it a step further, because as writers, most of you, I would imagine, are sitting most of your day while you're writing. I'm encouraging more and more of my writers and computer users to stand while they're writing, if possible, or minimally sit on an exercise ball to encourage better posture, because great posture in your neck ensures that the nerve won't be, or minimizes the chances that the nerve will be impinged in your neck. And I'll refer your listeners to, I think it's a pretty good video that we did for our site called The Secret to Perfect Posture. And it very effectively demonstrates how sitting and holding your head properly really can affect the nerve sending to your arms, and even the way that you're able to breathe, and even managing things like headaches and eye strain while sitting in front of a computer. So it's called The Secrets of Perfect Posture on my site. It was done maybe about a month or two ago, and it's been wildly popular because, again, most of us don't think about posture as affecting other things. They think it just looks bad. But posture really affects your function very, very strongly.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to check out that video. So that's at drtanya.com, correct?
It is. It is.
Oh,
and
awesome.
There's a little search bar at the top, and it's The Secret to Perfect Posture.
And again, it's drtanya.com. And, you know, Dr. Tanya, I've seen some of your other videos, which are excellent. So I can't wait to see that. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I know myself, I get so into my writing, I'm so into what I'm doing, that hours could go by, and I've been in the same position sitting down, you know. And recently I started actually forcing myself to get up at least for 5 minutes and walk around and take a break. But I'm going to try that, you know, writing while standing, see how I do with that.
You know, I have a laptop, and I'm lucky enough to have kind of a really broad windowsill in my office, so I'll actually do some of the writing while standing. And my husband, who spent a lot of time on a computer as a salesperson, he actually had a little a little desk made. It's just a very rudimentary table made at standing height. So he is able to either stand, perch on a stool, or then sit at his traditional desk so that he's changing his posture really several times, quite a few times a day, to be honest with you. And the more you move your body, the healthier it will be. Sitting, I call sitting the new smoking. Sitting is probably the worst thing you could be doing. And there was a study that came out in the last year or so, and they did a retrospective study on two groups of people, and we're talking thousands of people in each group. And they looked at the first group were people like yourself that would sit and write or sit on a computer and sit and commute all day long. But those people exercised really regularly and really aggressively, about an hour every single day. So they sat for a living, but they exercised really hard for about an hour a day. And the second group they looked at never, ever, ever exercised, but they worked on their feet. They were waitresses, they were teachers, they were construction workers, people that were up and around and about all day long, but never stepped foot inside a gym, never did any running or weight training. And they measured things like diabetes, heart disease, cancer rates, and they found that overwhelmingly the people who never exercised but rarely sat were far healthier than those that sat all day long.
That's incredible.
And that's mind-blowing. I paused there for a reason because that should blow your mind.
It does.
If you sit all day and exercise for an hour a day, it's still better than not exercising, but you'll never be as healthier as someone who moves around all day. So the moral of the story there is get up and move. Sit as little as humanly possible while still maintaining your career. Right standing up. Lie down a little bit. Sit on an exercise ball. That's called active sitting, and we can talk more about that if you'd like to. Just the more you move, the healthier you will be, period, end of story.
Wow, that's incredible. I wonder, now, do you know, do they make sort of like computer tables that are high that you can use to, you know, say you want to set up your laptop and you want to stand. I mean, do you know if they make such things to make that possible?
They sure do.
Easier?
In fact, I did a little health talk at a store called the Healthy Back Store, and they are nationwide, and they make a desk that converts. So you can sit at it, and then you can put, you know, pop a lever, and it raises up to standing height. And I'm sure it's not inexpensive, but they do make them for those who are able to invest financially in something like that. But I can tell you that the desk that I use, I have a desk at my chiropractic office that I use standing up. I think it was $69 at IKEA. It's not a full-on desk, but it's a table at just a perfect height that I put my laptop on. I think most
That's
of us
great.
Are working on laptops these days. So you can be very, very creative. My husband paid a handyman just, you know, $100 or so to kind of custom create, you know, the perfect height table for him that he has his printer and his monitor and his keyboard and some files and stuff. So it doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be functional. But, you know, standing, and you don't want to stand all day either. You do want to stand a little bit. You want to sit a little bit. You want to active sit a little bit. You want to go out for a walk. You know, keeping moving is really the key.
So, like, you could actually, even if I had to, I would do this, like, set a timer and maybe, like, sit for 15 minutes and then get up and stand and walk around for 15 minutes. Would that be, you know, an alternative?
That is a wonderful alternative. And
okay.
For those of you who have never tried sitting on an exercise ball, that is a near-perfect solution because most of us, to be honest with you, Daria, with good intentions, are not going to get up every 15 minutes or so. They're going to get up maybe once an hour, maybe, you know, once every 2 or 3 hours. But sitting on an exercise ball requires that you engage your core muscles, and your core is not just your ab muscles like your six-pack. It's actually your muscles that do make up your six-pack, but also your side, your back muscles, also your perineum, your undercarriage, and your diaphragm muscles. So imagine the kind of an internal ball that contains all of your abdominal organs, and that is your entire core. So if you sit on an exercise ball and you don't contract those muscles, you're going to fall off. So that is kind of a passive exercise or an active sitting. So that is far better than sitting in a chair that just kind of holds you up, that you can kind of slouch into.
Okay, now what about chairs, ergonomic chairs? Is it still too much to sit all day, even if you have an ergonomic chair? Curious.
I do believe that that is kind of the best of the worst. So if you're going to sit in a chair that's not a ball, you should sit in an ergonomic chair. But, you know, it's not one size fits all. I was at the store, this Healthy Back store, and they have a wide variety of beautiful and not inexpensive chairs that are ergonomic in nature. They're very adjustable, but they still require that you sit all day. You know, you're still sitting, you're not moving a muscle, you're not engaging your own muscles. So if you have to sit in a traditional chair, yes, you know, make an investment in one of those chairs. But ideally, you would be sitting on something more active like a ball and moving around much more than not, for sure.
Okay, yeah, I've used those balls before. I used to do functional training at a local studio down here. You're talking like this big, it was like a big red ball that I used to do different exercises on.
Absolutely. Yeah, they call them Swiss balls as well. Absolutely.
Okay. And those can get pretty, people can pretty much find them anywhere, right? Correct? Like,
oh, they're at Target for $20. They come with a pump. Okay. I mean, they're very readily available.
Okay, great. And I've also used something called a Bosu, which is rather interesting, but I guess that's kind of, I'm getting sort of off the rails here, but that was another, that wouldn't be good for sitting, but I have to go get another one of those because that was really good for balancing. But
you could put a Bosu on a low stool or something, and that would also give you a similar effect. So you can be creative for sure.
Okay, and a Bosu is one of, just for anybody listening who doesn't know, it's like, it's round and it's one side's flat and the other side's like a, I don't know, like a big bubble, basically.
It's like a half a ball.
It's like a half a ball, and it's amazing what kind of exercises you can do with that. But I'm happy to hear that can work. So you could put that on top of a chair, right, and then sit on top of that. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I would suggest that you put it on top of a chair with no back. You know, so you could really be solid on there. You don't want to fall, obviously. You want to be safety first, but that can definitely give you the same type of, you want to create a little instability so your body has to work at being stable.
Wow, that's really interesting. I'll have to try that. I know, and writers can relate to this. You get so focused on what you're doing. I get so absorbed in writing a story, whether it's a news story or an opinion thing, or I just wrote a book for someone, that it's amazing. It's scary how much time can go by, and you've been sitting in the same position and not even realizing the toll that's taking on your body. So I'm really happy to have you on today, Dr. Tanya, to learn about, practical ways we can avoid that.
Well, I hope I've been helpful. I know the time just flies. I'm happy to take any more questions from you or from an audience member. If anyone is listening and wants to call in, I'm happy to chat.
Yeah, my next question I was going to ask you, because I know you're based in Maryland, but is there a resource for people, say somebody's listening and now they want to find a good chiropractor or a good massage therapist, do you know of any resources where they might be able to find, the best people in their particular area?
I do, and I can only really speak to chiropractic. The chiropractic offices are usually a great conduit to find great massage therapists, so that's also a good place to start. There are two websites that I think do a great job of only listing really highly qualified chiropractors. The first is it's letters. It's ICPA4Kids.org, and it stands for the International Chiropractic Pediatric Association, number 4Kids.org. So ICPA4Kids.org. And the reason I send you to a pediatric referral website is because those doctors have a really great and thorough understanding about family wellness care. Some chiropractors only deal with kind of pain management and accidents, and they can still be really, really good. But family-based chiropractors really seem to take the time to educate their patients and have a very broad knowledge and really proactively staying well. So if you go on that website, ICPA4Kids.org, they have a little tab at the top called, Find a Doctor. And you put in your zip code and you'll find a chiropractor in your area. And then another one is called Find a Great Chiro, chiro.com. And there again, if you put in your website, you can find a chiropractor who's been really highly trained on this very specific and very state-of-the-art technology that helps to diagnose problems that can lead to carpal tunnel syndrome. So I use those frequently in my practice just to find colleagues for patients who are moving or traveling.
That's fantastic. And Dr. Tanya, of course, if anyone is listening in your area, can you give us the name of your practice and where they can find out more? I mean, obviously you gave out your blog, but the name of your practice and where people might be able to find you online or the practice.
Absolutely. It is Broadneck Family Chiropractic, and we're in Annapolis, Maryland. It's Broadneck Family Chiropractic, and I have the distinct pleasure of practicing with two incredible partners, Dr. Marissa Wally and Dr. Terry Forder, and they see the bulk of our patients. At this point in my career, almost 25 years in, most of my role is out of the office doing public education like I'm doing today. I do see patients still on a weekly basis, but they do the vast majority of patient care, and we would love to chat with your listeners about how we might help them find a chiropractor or answer their health-related questions. We're on the web at the office at yourfamilychiropractors.com. And we also link through my drtanya.com website to the practice directly. So there's lots of ways to find us.
Great. And Dr. Tanya, this is show is called WriteStream, and I can't let you go without talking about blogging because, one, I have to say I absolutely love your blog. I love the not just the content, which is fabulous, but just the way it looks. And I just wanted to ask you, like, how and why did you get into blogging, and how has that been helpful to you in sort of getting the word out I guess, helping out the practice as well?
Well, I really love seeing my patients, and I think I've done a really great job, again, for over two decades in doing that. But I really felt called to kind of a bigger purpose or a bigger mission, because treating one-to-one is a lovely and fulfilling opportunity and gift, but there are a lot of sick people out there, Daria. And for me to be able to reach more people, you know, for instance, I can maybe on a great day see 50 patients in my practice. Last Friday on my blog, I reached 35,000 people. So
wow.
That is exponentially more people that I could that I can reach via the written word. And so I really felt called to do something kind of bigger than myself. And it has been just an incredibly wild and fun ride. I look at my blog statistics all the time, and we have readers in Bangladesh and in Thailand and in Stockholm and in Iceland, and I just would never have been able to reach those people in my office. So I had to look kind of beyond myself to get out of the office and get out of my own comfort zone, because I'm not a trained writer like you are. I'm a trained chiropractor. And put my messages into what I believe is a very user-friendly way. You know, there's so much great health information on the web, and unfortunately, half the time, it makes me nod off to sleep. It's very dry.
Exactly.
And very factual. And
yeah.
There are a lot of great lifestyle bloggers, and they're hysterical, and they engage me, but I'm not sure that they're giving me good, solid health information. So I felt, you know, I saw a void, and I attempt to fill it with giving really good, solid health advice, but through an every girl lens, where I might make you laugh, might make you chuckle, I might even make you mad at me if you don't agree with me, but I'm going to get an emotional response out of you. And when you're emotional about something, it's when you make a change in your life.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, I mean, I commend you because you do that very well. Your personality just shines right through, and I love that it's great information. It's information that people can rely on. But just as you said, it's fun, and you want to read it. I mean, I've read through several of your posts, and they're just, you know, they're fun and informative. And that's the thing. I mean, I nod out to reading WebMD and places like, not that I'm knocking WebMD, but I'm just saying, I just threw that name out there because it just happened to pop into my head. But you're absolutely right. It's so dry and clinical. So reading your blog is like the best of both worlds, because you're getting valid health advice, but it's fun to read, and it entices people to want to read more. I mean, I was scrolling through and looking at all your different things and all the different categories. You cover so many relevant topics pertaining to good health and wellness.
Yeah, and they are
excellent.
Very varied. I mean, I have some commentary sometimes to, well, what qualifies you to talk about relationships? And I'm certainly not a relationships expert, except for the fact that I've had many relationships over, you know, the last 45 years. And everything that affects your life affects your health. So if a patient comes in and they have a horrific health issue, like, you know, migraine headaches or severe back pain, and there's no clinical reason for it, you know, we ask, well, what's happening at home? And if they're going through a horrific divorce, that relationship is affecting their health. And now I can't counsel their divorce, but I can encourage them to seek counsel so that
mm-hmm.
they can be healthier going through the process. So everything affects your health, not only diet and exercise and being properly aligned and massage, but what you eat, how much you sleep, your relationships, your stress management, how you're managing your time. All those things affect your health. And I've spent a few decades on this earth. I've experienced all that personally, but also professionally in my practice. So I feel called to talk about all of those things.
No, and you do a wonderful job. I just love it. And I love your videos, Dr. Tanya. So have you found those to be, obviously, I think they're very effective, but, I mean, how have those also contributed to, you know, your ability to get the message out there?
They really do. I call myself the show me state. You know, I learn better by seeing than reading always. And I have a great team. I have to give a shout out to my editorial team and my management team at Dr. Tanya. They make me look way better than I am, I think. And they have done some great videos, and they've made a great website for me to share my messages. And I find that we get probably the highest response when we post a video. People engage and will comment that they really have enjoyed those. So, you know, some of us learn visually. Some of us learn, you know, reading. We have different ways of processing information. So I have a particular love for the video approach, and I think a lot of people feel the same way.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it gives you even more credibility, not that you don't from the blog, but I think when people can connect, you know, faith to the information, I think it gives them a little bit more of a comfort level.
Absolutely, lends itself to having, it's a multi-faceted relationship then, multi-dimensional relationship.
Yeah, and it's great, you know, in this age of new media where we have all of these fantastic tools, too, to get the word out. It's just incredible, and it's crazy not to take advantage of it. Like you said, I mean, you're reaching people worldwide because of advanced technology and your willingness to get out there and use it.
It's really cool. I have to say it's a little overwhelming. I've always called myself I'm very low tech and high touch, and I've had to revise that mission statement because I'm getting higher and higher tech every day. So we're pretty active on Twitter, and I hope that your listeners will check us out on Ask Dr. Tanya, AskDrTania. That's our handle for Twitter and Facebook. Facebook is a little more my speed. I enjoy that a little more. Twitter, it's a whole new language that I'm trying very diligently to learn. And we are Instagram as well. So we're trying to touch all of the venues in social media. It's really hard to keep up with all of them, though, but hopefully we're reaching as many people as we can.
No, and I think that's great. I talk about this every week, no matter who my guest is. I think with social media, the most effective thing is to pick like two or three and really work those, because there's so many platforms out there that you can get completely overwhelmed. If you try to spread yourself too thin, you're going to do yourself a disservice and the people you're trying to reach. So I think it's smart to focus on those three. Now, Dr. Tanya, you have a Facebook page, you said?
We do. And so it's Ask Dr. Tanya. And okay. I'm so thrilled we're approaching 6,000 Facebook friends, and I'm really, really excited about that. Again,
great.
That would take me years in my practice to have 6,000 new patients. So in under a year, well under a year, we're approaching very quickly 6,000 friends. So in addition to our we post daily on our site, drtanya.com. We post an article daily except for Saturday and Sunday. But I also post things that I have kind of culled from the web. Sometimes they're just funny little cartoons. Sometimes they're very serious articles or stats and facts and figures. But I try to post things as I come across them to share them with my community. I like to think that we're kind of a clearinghouse that people can come to us and find out, things that might improve and enhance all parts of their life.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm really enjoying reading your blog, and I'm all about that. And I'm just so thrilled that you were able to join me today, because it is one of my passions is health and wellness and alternative therapies and healing. And I'm so glad that you were able to join me, Dr. Tanya, because it was fun to take like a little break from just always talking. As much as I love writing, I love authors, it was fun to kind of take a break and mix it up a little bit here today. So before we sign off, is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
Well, just that you should know that when your body hurts or tingles or feels differently than it should, than it feels anything out of the norm, that they should get attention. We tend to think, this will go away, or this is maybe normal for me. But listen to your body. Your body will rarely mislead you in its signals. We tend to pop a pill or a medicine to get rid of to get fast temporary relief of whatever, fill in the blank. But like 85% of pharmaceuticals are just palliative. They just make you feel better. They do not address the cause of the symptom that you're having. So I'd encourage the listeners to really listen to their bodies. And if something is not right, to get appropriate attention and to really get to the cause of the problem. Shoving something under the rug does no one good. It just makes it worse later. And just engage in healthy lifestyle. We're all about prevention versus being reactive. With our bodies, you're going to hopefully live in your body a good long time, and when parts wear out, it's no fun for the ride.
No, that is certainly true. Well, Dr. Tanya, I want to thank you again for joining me today. I hope you'll come back again in the future, and I'll definitely see you out there on Twitter and on Facebook.
Thank you so much for having me, Daria. I know this is not your normal MO, but I really am so honored that you thought of me to come and mix it up a little bit today, so I really appreciate the opportunity.
It was a lot of fun. All right, Dr. Tanya, you take care, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, everyone, that was the wonderful Dr. Tanya Howard. Please visit her blog, drtanya.com. That's drtanya.com. Check out all of her wonderful videos and blog posts there. You'll definitely want to favorite that and go back to it time and time again. And as she said, she's adding new content every day. So I really do hope that you enjoyed this. I'm probably going to want to do more shows like this. Where we kind of mix things up a little bit, because let's face it, if you're not feeling good and if you're dealing with stuff like carpal tunnel, you're not going to want to sit and write at your computer. And, life is all about enjoying the ride and taking the best care we can of our bodies. Like Dr. Tanya says, you'll enjoy it more if you have a healthy body. So Thank you, John, for suggesting, and thank you, Dr. Tanya, for joining me. Next week, we're going to do something even more, well, we're getting back more into the writing realm, but something else a little bit different, where I'm going to have a panel of independent authors, experts, you know, independent authors who have achieved a measure of success, you know, significant success with independent publishing, and we're going to talk about things like, okay, so now you've written your book, what's next? What to look for before you choose a self-publishing company, because there's so many of them out there. Should you set aside a budget when you write, and a marketing budget, and how are you going to connect? Well, first of all, how are you going to find your readership, and how are you going to connect with them? What social media platforms are the most effective ones for writers? Things like that. We're going to talk about marketing, the do's and don'ts, and these are, you know, these questions are going to be directed at people, like I said, who have already achieved success as independent authors. So their advice is going to be very valuable. So my role next week is basically going to be as a moderator, and I'm going to let the experts speak and share kind of, you know, their horror stories, if you will, and the things that have worked for them, so that especially new and upcoming authors can learn from other people's experience and not have to make the same mistakes that they did. I know in 2008 when I first published Water Signs, I was kind of like feeling my way around in the dark. I mean, I social media was kind of new to me. I had just gotten on Twitter. I had just started on Facebook. And I really didn't know what I was doing. And I sort of learned quickly but through trial and error. But if I can help other people avoid that and just sort of learn from people who have been there, done that, and now know the best paths to pursue for success with independent publishing, then that, I'm all about that. And, you know, the publishing industry has been turned upside down with the advent of new media, and it behooves us all as authors to kind of figure out what things are going to work best for us. And I don't even know authors that have been published traditionally that still, you know, the burden of most of the marketing still falls onto them just because of all the changes that have taken place in the industry because of social media and new technology. So I know Sarah Hoyt, who is an award-winning author with Bain Publishing, will be here next week. I've got a bunch of people joining us from the CLFA group on Facebook, which, by the way, if you're interested in interacting with some fabulous authors, you do not have to be an author yourself. You just have to be a liberty lover who likes to read. You can join us at the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook. There are some really wonderful, wonderful people in there, excellent writers, authors, readers. Just some interesting, friendly folks, and no, we don't always agree on everything, but we're always friends at the end of the day, and we're always very respectful of one another, so it's a great group to be a part of. So that, again, that's CLFA on Facebook. I want to give a shout-out to Snapperhead, who's been in the chat room. I am a contributing writer to theamericanjournal.com. I hope you'll check that out. It's the-american-journal.com. I got some book reviews posted up there and a press release for the soon-to-be-released Steps to Salvation, so please check that out. You can visit me at my blog, dariadigiovanni.com. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, find out more about RightStream Radio at rightstreamradio.com. You can find out more about John D. Gresham, another award-winning author and host of Military Monday. Lisa Tarvez, author of the book Just Believe, who is a metaphysician who hosts a show called Just Believe every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then we have licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Billy Eisenberg and family law attorney Sheena Benjamin Wise. They host a call-in program called Family Power Hour Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Like me, they are also based in South Florida. And then we have Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss with Lisa Tarvez and me every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern. So we're working on bringing, we want to add two more shows to the lineup. We are still working diligently on that. So stay tuned. We're trying to add a good tech show and to the lineup, and hopefully we'll get 7 out of 7 days of programming. But I want to thank everyone again for joining me here today for RightStream Tuesday with Dr. Tanya. Hope you enjoyed it. And tell your friends about it. I'll be posting a link to the archive, so if you missed the show, you'll be able to catch it there. And again, next week will be our panel of experts on the publishing and marketing process in independent publishing. So until then, everybody, please keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity, and I will see you back here next week for RightStream Tuesday.